Hello and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for November 22, 2023. I'm your reader, Craig Shives. The headline on the front page, from Pinecrest Center, principal gets pied as a prize. Food drive sends 665 non-perishable to Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank and others. Casey Studer, principal at Pinecrest Center in Mason City, was on the receiving end of several whipped cream pies to the face on Tuesday, delivered by students and staff in celebration of the school's fall food drive. One of our school goals this year is to help students be able to have a better understanding of our community, to be able to understand how their community can be of support to them, but also how they can give back and can serve their community, Studer said. The food drive garnered 60 pie crusts and fillings to donate to North Iowa Community Action for its annual Thanksgiving meal. We were able to leverage and connect through some phenomenal community partners in North Iowa Community Action Organization and Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. Part of the Mason City Community School District and located on the Four Oaks Psychiatric Medical Institute for Children, Pinecrest Center serves children and teens with severe social, emotional, and behavioral needs. Studer said a points system was implemented to encourage kids to exhibit good behavior, thereby contributing to the food bank. Students were able to utilize safe and appropriate behaviors to earn cans that they would then be able to donate, just for making good and safe choices in the classroom. Between the students, staff, community, and donations from local businesses like Hy-Vee East, who provided 45 non-perishable food items, the drive was able to donate 665 assorted items to Hawkeye Harvest. That effort earned several students and a few staff the grand prize: get a free shot at the principal with a whipped cream pie. Alexander Schmidt is an education general assignment reporter for the Globe Gazette. He is the individual who wrote this article. Also on the front page, an article entitled "Governor Reynolds Pardons Turkeys Ahead of Thanksgiving Holiday." In the brisk November air, freedom and flourish strutted carefree across the lawn of the Iowa Governor's Mansion on Monday at Terrace Hill, as the two turkeys were spared from this year's Thanksgiving festivities. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds carried out the annual tradition of pardoning a pair of turkeys, declaring them free to roam, and praising Iowa's turkey industry and its role in the Thanksgiving holiday. The turkeys from the Moline Farm in Manson were named after Iowa's new slogan, "Freedom to Flourish." They will be sent to a non-commercial farm in southeast Iowa, the governor's office said. The birds were raised by 15-year-old Ava Moline, the daughter of Iowa Turkey Federation President Brad Moline. Ava and her brothers, Coy and Logan, co-own Golden Prairie Turkeys in Manson. The siblings are fifth-generation turkey farmers. What I truly love about Ava and her brother's story is it's such a great example of the Iowa farming tradition, Reynolds said. The Molines are fifth-generation turkey farmers, and their family's legacy is something we all respect. Brad Moline thanked Reynolds for her support of the turkey industry at the ceremony. "We've had some challenging years over the years, and this past one's been another one. But with their support and guidance, the turkey industry is alive and well and strong in the state of Iowa," Moline said. Iowa farmers raise about 12 million turkeys a year, according to the Iowa Turkey Federation. The industry has a $10.64 billion economic impact. The event was held virtually last year because of the prevalence of avian influenza, or bird flu, in commercial flocks in Iowa. The virus has cropped up again in counties around Iowa and other states this fall. According to the Iowa Department of Agriculture, there have been 14 cases of bird flu in Iowa flocks since October 20, with 3 detections in commercial turkey flocks. The disease has spread this fall from wild birds migrating south for the winter, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig said. The spread is, quote, on par, close quote, with last year. But Naig said officials decided the ceremony could be carried out safely. This is an important moment for the turkey industry, he said. It's something that's got tradition and history to it. It can be safely done from a biosecurity standpoint. Despite the bird flu cases seen this fall, Naig said there will not be a major impact on turkey prices for Thanksgiving dinner. Prices are expected to be lower this year than last, because the virus is not as widespread, and turkeys produced for Thanksgiving were processed before the uptick in cases. Those birds have been harvested and processed and in the supply chain for quite some time now, he said, so there really is no immediate impact on Thanksgiving. In local and state news, we find an article entitled Mason City to host annual Home for the Holidays event on Saturday. Main Street, Mason City's annual Home for the Holidays celebration will be 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday, November 25, in Central Park. Downtown will be busy with shopping, activities for kids, treats, hot cocoa, and more. The day-long event starts with the Run with Rudolph Fun Run at 9:30 a.m. This race is a 5K pet-friendly race. Registration is $25 per person and includes a t-shirt. There will be a contest for the merriest and best-dressed participants outside of Simply Nourished following the race. Beginning at 2 p.m., indoor and outdoor Christmas markets will open. The indoor market is located inside Southbridge Mall and boasts a wide variety of gifts, treats, handmade items, and in-home businesses. The Simply Nourished Outdoor Christmas Market on Federal Plaza is a new feature this year and offers a charming selection of locally made gifts, goodies, and more. Santa will be on location, so bring your camera. Children can work on interactive crafts, decorate holiday cookies, and have lots of other fun. Enjoy hot cocoa, fresh baked goodies, or dine in at one of downtown's locally owned restaurants. The Quarry, the Happy Donkey, and Laredo's are all open through dinner service. The Happy Donkey and Laredo's also offer late night drinks and music. Stay for the illumination of the Mayor's Christmas Tree in Central Park. Mayor Bill Schickel chooses an individual to light the tree each year and will make remarks. There will also be live music and caroling. Next, an article entitled DeSantis Unveils Sharper Tongue in Trump Critiques. After months of taking a more passive-aggressive approach with the runaway leader in the Republican presidential primary, Ron DeSantis this past weekend in Iowa was much more direct in his criticism of former President Donald Trump. During an event Friday with fellow Republican presidential candidates Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy, and again on Saturday while talking to reporters at his campaign's new office in this Des Moines suburb, Urbandale, DeSantis eschewed the vague references to Trump that he and many other candidates have used when talking about the former president, instead offering multiple direct criticisms. DeSantis got some help from his new supporter on the campaign trail, Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, who also offered a criticism of Trump's campaign style. It started Friday during the event hosted by the Family Leader, an Iowa Christian conservative organization, when DeSantis was asked about Republicans who feel he should wait 4 years instead of running for president now against Trump. DeSantis pounced. You compare Donald Trump with me? I delivered on 100% of my promises as governor of Florida. There wasn't a single thing I didn't deliver on, DeSantis said. Quite frankly, if you look at Donald Trump's campaign in 2016 and then compare his rhetoric now, he's campaigning on the things he promised to do in 2016 and didn't deliver. DeSantis asserted that Trump, as president, failed to complete construction of a wall across the U.S.-Mexico border, did not drain the swamp in reference to a pledge to change the political class in the nation's capital, and added to the national debt. I think Donald Trump was somebody that came and said he'd fight for us, but we also need somebody that's going to win, DeSantis said. And yes, that involves, of course, winning the election. It's my view that when push comes to shove in November of 2024, if Donald Trump's the candidate, the American people are not going to go there. That's my firm belief. Later in the event, family leader, president, and chief executive officer Bob Vanderplatz asked the three candidates about the derogatory nicknames Trump assigns to other candidates, including, in DeSantis' case, Ron DeSanctimonious. DeSantis' response included a shot fired back at Trump. It's only effective if we stoop to that level. You don't see me indulging in that, DeSantis said. I don't even know what that name means, quite frankly. But it's fine. Quite frankly, I'm quite confident the former president couldn't spell it if he was put to the test. Trump declined an invitation to the family leaders event. Vanderplatz this year has been critical on social media of the former president. Throughout this year, Trump has held a commanding and consistent lead over DeSantis and the rest of the Republican presidential candidates in polling. In rolling averages of Republican presidential primary polls in Iowa, Trump is at 47%, according to Real Clear Politics, and 45%, according to 538, while second-place DeSantis is at 17.3% and 18%, respectively. DeSantis' focused criticism continued on Saturday at his new Iowa campaign headquarters. Trump had a chance to come to the family leader last night, and he didn't. I think he's taken positions attacking things that Governor Reynolds has done, like the Iowa Heartbeat Bill, a significant restriction on abortions. I think that's a mistake, that he's attacking that legislation as something that's terrible, DeSantis said. I think it's been a mistake how he's not willing to engage with Iowans outside of swooping in and doing a speech and then just leaving. Reynolds, at that point, chimed in, agreeing with DeSantis' criticism of Trump's campaign style. Reynolds recently became the first sitting Iowa governor since 1995 to endorse a presidential candidate before the state's first-in-the-nation caucuses when she endorsed DeSantis. That's the expectation of Iowans, Reynolds said. They expect Trump to debate. They expect him to show up. They expect him to earn their vote, and he's just not doing it. DeSantis' campaign has also taken its criticism of Trump online in recent days, highlighting on social media what it calls Trump's accidents. The tracker highlights moments when, for example, Trump misidentifies an individual, or when Trump makes a statement the DeSantis campaign views as a mistake. A recent example highlighted Trump's comments during a campaign event Saturday in Fort Dodge, in which he claimed credit for getting Iowa Republican U.S. Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley elected in 2020 and 2022. A spokesman for Trump's campaign responded Monday by saying DeSantis is competing for, quote, a distant second place, close quote, in presidential primary polls, and said endorsements from Reynolds or Vanderplatz will not help DeSantis. Vanderplatz has not yet endorsed a candidate. Some national reports have suggested he is poised to endorse DeSantis, just as Reynolds did. A statement from Alex Latcham, the Trump campaign's early voting states director, spelled Vanderplatz's last name with a dollar sign in place of the S in an apparent reference to the $95,000 paid for advertising and tickets for the Family Leaders event last summer with presidential candidates. emasculated Ron DeSantis has put all of his time, energy, and resources in Iowa only to see himself compete for a distant second place against Nikki Birdbrain Haley, Latcham said in a statement. The night he was elected, my father stayed up until 5:30 a.m. watching the returns before leaving home at 7 a.m. for work at Mason City's Lehigh Cement Plant. On January 20, 1961, we were excused from classes at Holy Family Catholic School to be able to watch the inaugural. Not all Iowans were pleased with Kennedy. Iowa was one of only two states where he received under 40% of the votes. Of Iowa's 99 counties, he won only five, all with a substantial majority of Catholics. Notwithstanding, we rejoiced that this witty, brilliant, funny, handsome president was one of us. As President JFK faced numerous challenges, which he tackled with alacrity, many historians believe that the years 1953 to 63 were America's greatest. Ike and JFK were in office, America was at peace, our military was strong, and the U.S. economy was the envy of the world. Despite political differences, the U.S. was a united country. JFK moved our nation forward by cutting taxes, which stimulated the economy and created jobs. He pushed forward in the race to the moon, proposed substantial civil rights legislation, and presided over a foreign policy which was designed to keep Americans and the Western world safe. His administration also developed the Peace Corps and implemented the Alliance for Progress. In 1962, Kennedy delivered a wonderful speech at Rice University in Houston, Texas, which my son, Derek, recently watched on YouTube. It's since become known as JFK's, quote, moon speech, close quote. My son asked, why can't we have a president like JFK? I replied, because we're willing to settle for less. Kennedy's death caused a collective palpable sadness, exemplified by a sign placed on the window of a New York City tailor shop. That sign read, closed, due to a death in the family. JFK was his 98-year-old grandmother's favorite. She had avidly followed his political career from the time he became a congressman at age 29 in 1947. But after he died, and for the remainder of her life, Mary Josephine Fitzgerald lived until 1964. Her family kept her from learning of his tragic fate. Prior to his funeral, JFK's body lay in state in the Capitol Rotunda for 18 hours. An estimated 250,000 people filed past his coffin. The line stretched for more than 2 miles, and an estimated 50,000 people were turned away. The 35th president's funeral was, at the time, the largest gathering of individuals ever to have transpired on U.S. soil. His last speech, planned for delivery in Dallas, contained these examples of his pro-USA philosophy. We in this country, in this generation, are, by destiny rather than by choice, the watchmen on the walls of world freedom. We ask, therefore, that we may be worthy of our power and responsibility, that we may exercise our strength with wisdom and restraint, and that we may achieve in our time and for all time the ancient visions of peace on earth and goodwill toward men. That must be our goal, and the righteousness of our cause must always underlie our strength. JFK, war hero, congressman, senator, prolific author, and commander-in-chief, made the ultimate sacrifice for his country. America misses him to this day. And now an article entitled, Reynolds Touts Income Tax Cuts. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said Monday she was in talks with legislative and industry leaders about further reducing Iowa's income tax rates in the upcoming legislative session. Reynolds promised another round of income tax cuts when she announced in September the state ended the fiscal year with $1.83 billion in budget surplus. Speaking with reporters on Monday, Reynolds said she wants to make sure any tax reductions put in place will be sustainable in the long term. We're spending a lot of time looking at the environment, watching what's happening with inflation, and the impact that it's having on our businesses in the state of Iowa, she said. Reynolds pointed to the surplus and the Taxpayer Relief Fund, a separate fund that ended last year with $2.74 billion, as evidence that Iowa is collecting too much in taxes. We've got money there, and we're going to turn it back to Iowans, and we need to be more competitive, she said. Reynolds and Republican leaders passed a tax overhaul in 2022 that set individual income taxes on a path to a flat 3.9% in 2026. Corporate income taxes will fall to a flat 5.5% by 2028 if revenue from corporate taxes hits certain benchmarks each year. The law also eliminated the state tax on retirement income. I think Iowans are going to be very happy. Early projections look really well, Reynolds said. Iowans are going to be happy with where we're going to be able to go next year. Reynolds said she would have more details about the plan in her condition of the state address in January. Iowa's 2024 legislative session starts January 8. At a Cato Institute conference in February, Reynolds said her goal is to eliminate the state income tax by the end of her current term. Iowa lawmakers did not make any changes to the state income tax during this year's legislative session, but they passed a property tax law that constrains property tax growth and provided at least $100 million in property tax relief. The law passed with bipartisan support. Republican legislative leaders have said they plan to pass further tax cuts next year. In a statement after Iowa's budget surplus was announced in September, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker called for bigger and bolder income tax cuts. As long as I am Majority Leader, the Senate will continue to reduce taxes on Iowans, and in the 2024 legislative session, we will again work with Governor Reynolds and the House to achieve that goal, Whitaker said. Legislative Democrats have warned that further income tax cuts will benefit large corporations and the wealthy at the expense of low-income and middle-class Iowans. While Governor Reynolds is again slashing corporate taxes and promising more giveaways to come, middle-class families still aren't getting ahead, Iowa Senator Janet Peterson, the ranking member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, said in September. And now an article entitled Wolf Asks to Pull Illinois Pipeline Request and Refile. Wolf Carbon Solutions moved to withdraw its carbon dioxide pipeline permit application in Illinois on Monday to address concerns identified by state regulators. This voluntary action does not impact our commitment to the project and its stakeholders or the ongoing regulatory processes, including with the Iowa Utilities Board and Army Corps of Engineers, said Dean Ferguson, the company's president. Ferguson said Wolf will apply again early next year with the Illinois Commerce Commission for permission to build its pipeline system. About 90 miles of pipe in eastern Iowa would connect to two ethanol plants to transport their captured carbon dioxide to Illinois for underground sequestration. Wolf made its application for a certificate of authority to construct and operate its pipeline in Illinois in June 2023. In October, a commission engineer recommended that the application be denied for a number of reasons, including it's unclear whether all potentially affected landowners were notified of the proposal, agreements with the ethanol plants had not been finalized, and Wolf had not secured a sequestration facility. Wolf had not made required applications to federal regulators. Wolf did not provide an emergency response plan in case of a pipeline rupture. The engineer also said Wolf's proposal appears to be at odds with the intent of state law that governs carbon dioxide pipelines. Although I am not an attorney, in my opinion, Wolf's proposed pipeline does not match the legislative purpose of the CO2 Act, which sought to promote and use Illinois coal, according to the engineer's written testimony. Another engineer for the Illinois Commission had similar concerns about a pipeline system proposed by Navigator CO2, which later abandoned its multi-state proposal. Wolf said in its motion to withdraw its application that it believes the application is sufficient, but that through a new application it can address and moot many, if not all, of the concerns expressed. Wolf began its hazardous liquid pipeline permit process in Iowa in June 2022. It does not have yet a defined timeline for completion. And now we have an article called Radiate and Shine. Badly injured survivor finds comfort with horse. From Mayfield Township in Michigan, for Kylie Osage, the 19-year-old college student who survived two deadly mass school shootings in Michigan, one as a senior at Oxford High School in 2021, and another 14 months later as a freshman at Michigan State University, Blaze stands as a source of comfort in a world otherwise shattered by bullets. Osage runs a brush along Blaze's broad forehead, then gives him a kiss between the eyes. "I feel very at home when I'm with him," Osage says of the 13-year-old American quarter horse she has owned since 2019. "He's my best friend." A better friend than time, perhaps, which now gathers for Osage like dust in a corner, a clingy bundle of haunting memories that she can neither forget nor sweep away. 15 minutes as she lay shot and bleeding in an Oxford High School hallway, 6 weeks recovering in a hospital, 14 months between a deadly high school shooting and another at Michigan State University, and daily physical pain she can never fully escape. Osage was severely wounded during the November 30, 2021 attack on Oxford High School, about 40 miles north of Detroit. She heard something like a balloon popping, then fell to the ground where she laid next to a classmate, Hannah St. Juliana, who died in the shooting. A heavy backpack filled with textbooks and a laptop weighed Osage down. She was unable to feel her legs or move. "It was the longest 15 minutes of my life," she said. Eventually, help arrived. Osage was loaded onto an ambulance and rushed to a hospital in nearby Pontiac, where she would spend the next 6 weeks recovering, longer than any of the six Oxford students and a staff member who were injured in the attack. Four died: St. Juliana, Justin Schilling, Madison Baldwin, and Tate Meyer, with whom Osage had partnered at a bullying prevention program at the local middle school on the morning of the shooting. The shooter was an Oxford student named Ethan Crumbly, whom Osage says she didn't know and whose name she will not utter. Instead, Osage plans to deliver an in-person victim impact statement during his sentencing hearing on December 8. "I'm excited to have my words heard and my story heard," said Osage, who spent 2 weeks writing the statement that she estimates will take about 10 minutes to deliver. Crumbly, 17, could be ordered to spend the rest of his life in prison. "That's what everyone is hoping for," Osage said, herself included. Osage delivered a memorable address at Oxford High's commencement in 2022, urging her classmates and the community to radiate and shine, a favorite saying she long has shared with her mother, Marita, and one that still appears on a sign outside the Oxford Elementary School. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for November 22, 2023. I'm your reader, Craig Shives. Thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome to the reading of The Messenger for November 22, 2023. on IRIS. Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Messenger for November 22, 2023. I'm your reader, Craig Shives. On the front page, we find an article entitled Main Street Celebrates Small Biz Saturday. While all the national chain stores in Fort Dodge will boast seemingly endless Black Friday sales and shoppers are sure to line up early for the doorbuster deals, Main Street Fort Dodge wants area shoppers to remember that the next day is a monumentally important sales day for locally owned small businesses. The concept of Small Business Saturday was created more than a decade ago by the American Express credit card brand as a way to encourage shoppers to spend the Saturday after Thanksgiving shopping at local small businesses. Main Street Fort Dodge, led by Executive Director Sharon Stroh, works with the downtown merchants to promote the shopping holiday. For shoppers who get downtown early, Main Street Fort Dodge will be offering $25 in Merry Money, good for purchases with participating retailers. To get their share of the Merry Money, people need to get to Green State Credit Union, 1207 Central Avenue, between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. The first 40 people to check in there will get the money. Visitors to participating businesses can enter a raffle drawing for one of two giveaway baskets filled with merchandise and products from all the downtown retailers. They can enter at any participating merchants, no purchase required. Most stores will offer special discounts, sales, and deals this weekend, Stroh said. Shoppers are also encouraged to pick up a holiday shopping punch card at any of the participating businesses. The punch cards are used to help track roughly how much is spent by shoppers. For every $10 spent, the card gets a punch, and each card can hold 5 punches. Shoppers then turn in those punch cards, which Stroh will collect and then calculate the day's economic impact. In 2022, there was a collective economic impact of over $8,700 just on Saturday, and 96% of Merry Money was circulated through the district, Stroh said. The local observance of Small Business Saturday is sponsored by Main Street Fort Dodge, Green State Credit Union, and Visit Fort Dodge. On the front page, we have another article entitled Ahead of Schedule. Cosgrove gives Nature Center project update to Board of Supervisors. From Gowrie, the River's Edge Discovery Center project is way ahead of schedule, the Webster County Board of Supervisors learned during its meeting on Tuesday morning. The project is really coming along, said Webster County Conservation Director Matt Cosgrove. They got a lot of outside work done here last week with the good weather, so trees are planted and a lot of landscaping stuff going in. The Nature Center project along the Des Moines River on 1st Street north of Central Avenue is about 80% complete, Cosgrove said. Of the $6.7 million budget, just over $6 million has been spent. Jensen Builders Limited of Fort Dodge is the contractor for the project. The project is being funded through a $4 million Destination Iowa grant from the state, a $300,000 grant from the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs, and through private donations. The Nature Center building will be focused on Iowa's water resources. The center exhibit space will feature an array of exhibits on the water cycle, wetlands, glaciers, and rivers and streams. Taylor Studios, an exhibition design firm out of Rantoul, Illinois, is working on building the water-themed exhibits that will be featured. The exhibits, which were bid to Taylor Studios for $1.7 million, are also about 80% complete, Cosgrove said. Installation is scheduled to start the last week of February and is expected to take 2 weeks to complete. But before the exhibits can be installed, Two artists from Des Moines will be painting several large murals around the space in January, he said. A tour for the supervisors to see the project for themselves will be scheduled in the coming weeks, Cosgrove said. We're looking at, hopefully, by sometime this spring, to wrap up the project, and then we'll still be looking at a ribbon cutting in early summer or July, he said. Cosgrove also gave updates on other county quality of life projects. The county is working on recreational trail projects around Dayton and Gowrie, each estimated at about $1.5 million, that are still in the early phases of permitting and land acquisition, but are expected to go to bid in January. Construction is expected to begin in February and be complete in October 2024. Hopefully, with one construction season, we can have both of those projects completely done, Cosgrove said. The recreational trail being built between Fort Dodge and Badger is expected to wrap up around August 2024. The $3.3 million project is about 20% complete at this point, Cosgrove said. Due to HVAC construction happening in the Webster County Courthouse, the Board of Supervisors has chosen to take its regular meetings on the road. Tuesday's meeting was held at the district offices for the Southeast Valley Community School District in Gowrie. The December 5 meeting will be held at the Dayton Community Center. And now, an article entitled Grief Shared is Grief Diminished by Brandon Bruski. For nearly 25 years, Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services has been holding the A Time for Angels service of remembrance for the Fort Dodge community. The event is to bring people together during the holiday season when people's grief can be at its greatest. The service will be at 1:30 p.m. December 3 at St. Olaf Lutheran Church, 239 North 11th Street. Owner and funeral director Phil Gunderson spoke about the origins of the service, saying, "We started this service in 1998. My wife, Keely, was the one who established this way back then. We recognize that the Christmas season is a very difficult time for those who are going through grief and loss, especially during that first year after a death, and so we started a service as a way to bring people together. With a service of remembrance, you help to remember and to support people and help people with their grief and loss and give perspective. It's been at St. Olaf for many years now," he added. "We have the Reverend Emily Sauer, and this year from St. Olaf, and then Father Ross Caniglia, who is a Catholic priest. We invite the families that we have served during this past year, and then we have opened it up to the community to come, and people will call in names of their loved ones. We read the names as part of it. There's messages of hope and of comfort and music. We remember those who have died not just during this past year, but in years past as well, because there's no time limit on grief. So we read the names, and we have the handmade angel ornaments that we then present to each family, one per family, and they can also purchase additional handmade angels after the service for $15 each. We present each family with these ornaments when the name is read and remembered. We get about maybe 300, sometimes 300 to 400 people at the service each year. And over the years, we've probably distributed around 1,000 angels per year. So it's about 25,000 angels that people have as a keepsake. A number of people will get an angel each year to remember different loved ones, as well as remember different loved ones, because each year the angel is different. Gunderson highlights the importance of the assistance this service offers to those who are grieving. We believe this is a very special and important community event for people to come together, he said. When someone dies, and especially at that first year, everything is new, everything is different. everything's turned upside down, and to come together with other people in the setting and hear the messages of hope and comfort in the and the music, and to have the symbolism of an angel ornament, which is very special to people. It also helps with your perspective that you're not alone in your grief. There are a lot of others that are experiencing that same thing. We've always believed that grief shared is grief diminished, he said. We always try as best we can to help ease the pain and ease the grief. We can't take it away, but we can help that journey through grief. Gunderson wished to express gratitude to everyone that helps make this service possible, saying, I'd like to give mention to my wife, Keely, and all of our staff. It's a very special service. We know that it can be a difficult day for people. We appreciate that we can help make differences in easing one's grief and loss. And I'd also like to mention St. Olaf's Church and Holy Trinity Parish and the support that we got from the community as a whole. We're collaborating with lots of people to help have a very meaningful service of remembrance. Next on the front page, an article entitled Final Arguments for Summit Pipeline Permit are due in January. Hundreds of pages of written briefs that argue for and against a hazardous liquid pipeline permit for Summit Carbon Solutions in Iowa are due before the end of the year, with written replies to those arguments due January 19, the Iowa Utilities Board recently ordered. The three-member board will thereafter decide whether to issue or deny a permit to Summit to allow construction of its carbon dioxide pipeline system and whether the company can use eminent domain to obtain land easements for about a quarter of its route. State law does not set a deadline for that decision, and the board has not estimated when its decision might come. Summit proposes a five-state pipeline system spanning more than 680 miles to transport captured carbon dioxide from ethanol plants to North Dakota for underground sequestration. The board's evidentiary hearing for Summit's proposal in Iowa ended November 8. After the hearing's conclusion, the board said it would allow a briefing schedule that is longer than normal due to the voluminous record and the upcoming holiday season, and would accept atypically long initial briefs of up to 150 pages, with some exceptions for even longer filings. It noted that the case file has tens of thousands of pages of testimony and exhibits. Pipeline opponents have sought to circumvent the laborious briefing process after the hearing concluded with a motion for the board to deny Summit's permit application. From our point of view, Summit clearly has failed to show that this project is in the public convenience and necessity, said Brian Jordy, an attorney for numerous landowners in several states, in reference to a state requirement for the grant permit to be issued. Matter of fact, not a single witness of the public has showed up and said it is convenient, and maybe a handful of, maybe the ethanol plant gentleman or so from Iowa, said it may be necessary, but no one else has, and they haven't proven it. Brett Dublinski, an attorney for Summit, said Jordy and others can make those arguments in their written briefs, and that seeking an abrupt decision from the board after the hearing is factually and legally incorrect and premature, according to a hearing transcript. The case has significant evidence about the benefits to the ethanol industry, to the corn economy, to the farm economy more broadly, and how that supports land values and tax revenues, and just generally the fabric of not only Iowa's economy, but Iowa as a whole, Dublinski said. The board denied Jordy's motion. More than half of Iowa's corn is used to produce ethanol, and Summit has argued that supporting the ethanol industry also supports higher corn prices. The company has agreements with ethanol plants to share profits from federal tax credits that reward capturing carbon dioxide and producing low-carbon fuels, along with increased profits from selling those fuels in new markets. The specific details of the agreements have not been made public. Pipeline opponents have argued that those profits will mostly benefit wealthy Summit investors. They further oppose the use of eminent domain to force construction of the pipeline system against landowners' wishes and worry about damage to farmland and safety threats from potential pipeline breaches. Summit's permit application in North Dakota is under reconsideration and has no definitive timeline for completion. The state's capital city of Bismarck recently sought to intervene in the process because of the pipeline's proximity, according to the documents filed with the state's Public Service Commission. Bismarck's petition said it does not support or oppose the company's proposal, but that it will be affected by it. Specifically, the city said the pipeline route might affect its further growth and the safety of its residents. The city's fire department might also lead an emergency response to a pipeline rupture. South Dakota rejected Summit's initial route proposal for that state, and the company has said it plans to reapply with a modified route. The company has not indicated when that might happen. Summit has delayed the projected operational date of its pipeline system by more than a year to 2026. On page 2, we find an article entitled "Giving Thanks Isn't Just a Holiday Tradition, It's Part of How Humans Evolved." It's the season of giving thanks, and it turns out humans have been doing it for a long, long time. As more researchers dig into the science of gratitude, they've found the feeling likely played a key role in helping our ancestors band together and survive. That legacy continues today as being in the mood for gratitude shapes who we are as a species and how we connect with the people around us. "This is something that is a part of our human DNA," said Sarah Schnitker, a psychologist at Baylor University. "It's a glue, in a sense, that holds us together. Humans are social animals. That's how we've lasted so long, not by being the biggest or the strongest, but by figuring out how to work together. A key part of building relationships is the idea of reciprocity. If you like me and do nice things for me, then I like you and do nice things for you," said Michael Tomasello, a developmental psychologist at Duke University. "The animal kingdom has some parallel give-and-take behaviors," said Malini Suchak, an animal behavior researcher at Canisius University. In experiments with capuchin monkeys and chimpanzees, Suchak found the primates became more willing to help out a partner if that individual had helped them in the past. Some scientists think the feeling of gratitude evolved to keep the helping exchanges going. In other words, if you were helped, you'd feel like you should repay the debt with a good deed in return, said Janai Nelson, who researches gratitude at Baylor and Harvard universities. This give and take, this is very primal and very important to a cooperative society, Nelson said. Otherwise, you just get a culture of takers. In animals and in humans, these aren't always one-to-one transactions. Sometimes an ape that gets groomed by another will later back that partner in a fight, Suchak said, showing that reciprocity might not be about keeping exact scores, but forming broader emotional ties. Though we can't speak chimp well enough to know if they're actually saying thanks, Suchak added, it makes sense that some form of this social debt showed up early in our lineage. It didn't just pop out of nowhere when humans evolved, Suchak said. Thousands of years later, gratitude has taken root in humans. Studies have found gratitude may show up in a few spots in our genes and brains, including ones linked to social bonding, feeling reward and seeing other people's points of view. And the feeling emerges early on. Children as young as 2 and 3 demonstrate they want to return favors, said Amrisha Vaish, who studies moral development at the University of Virginia. At age 4, children also show a tendency to pay it forward, she added. In a study, Vaish found that when kids got help completing a task, in this case, finding a key to unlock a box of stickers, they were more likely to share their stickers reward with a new person. It's that kind of behavior that shows gratitude is more than simple exchange, Schnitker said. It can make us more generous with other people in general, even if they didn't help us first. Giving thanks might be good for you, too. A 2016 study found that people who wrote letters of gratitude reported better mental health and saw changes in their brain activity, even months down the line. But Nelson pointed out that recognizing the giver, not just the gift, is key. So, if Thanksgiving has you in a mood for gratitude, she suggested focusing on thanking the people in your life, rather than just making gratitude lists of the stuff you have. This is more in line with why the feeling evolved in the first place, she said. It's not just about stuff and materialism, Nelson said. It's about relationships and the things that people do for you, and then the things that you can, in turn, do back for other people. And now some news briefs. Burnside man running for Board of Supervisors. Nathan Montgomery, of Burnside, announced Tuesday his plans to run for the District 2 seat on the Webster County Board of Supervisors during the 2024 election. Montgomery is running as a Republican. He is a 2019 graduate of St. Edmund's Catholic School. He operates a lawn care service. District 2 covers most of the southern half of Webster County. District 2 seat is currently filled by Mark Campbell, a Democrat. Next, an article entitled LeClaire Man Arrested After Driving Drunk, Leading Pursuit. A LeClaire man, who was found slumped over behind the wheel on the exit ramp of U.S. Highway 20 and Webster County Road P-59, with the vehicle still in drive, has been charged with felony, eluding and driving drunk after leading an Iowa State Patrol trooper on a brief pursuit through Colville on Monday. According to criminal complaints, a, quote, concerned citizen, close quote, reported the poor driving behavior of a 53-year-old Michael Leon Paxton, and when Iowa State Patrol Sergeant Wes Niles found Paxton on the exit ramp, he noticed a half-empty bottle of Jose, possibly the tequila brand Jose Cuervo, between Paxton's legs and a can of Coors Light beer on the center console. When Niles told Paxton to put the vehicle in park, Paxton instead hit the gas and took off, driving recklessly through Colville. Paxton allegedly reached speeds of more than 25 miles per hour above the speed limit, blowing through at least 4 stop signs during the pursuit, according to criminal complaints. The pursuit came to an end when Paxton turned onto a dead-end street, lost control, and went down an embankment. He then fled on foot to the Des Moines River and was apprehended when he had nowhere else to run. Niles also alleged that Paxton fought him when the trooper tried to cuff him and take him into custody. Paxton refused all sobriety testing, but Niles reported that the driver's speech was very slurred and he smelled strongly of alcohol. Paxton was charged with eluding over 25 miles per hour over the speed limit, a Class D felony, operating while under the influence, second offense, an aggravated misdemeanor, and interference with official acts, a simple misdemeanor. Paxton had his initial appearance in Webster County Magistrate Court on Tuesday morning. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for November 30, and he is being held on a $5,000 cash bond for the eluding charge. as well as $2,000 cash or security bond on the OWI charge. Paxton also collected citations for open container, failure to obey a stop sign, speeding, and driving while under suspension.